Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy speculation and advice. Now, along with the guys from GuillotineLeagues.com, here's your host, Paul Charchian.
It is a bi-apocalypse edition of Fantasy Football Weekly. I'm Paul Charchian. Co-hosts today are Scott Fish and Brian Johnson, GuillotineLeagues.com. Hello, guys.
Hello, Charch. I love this week.
You love this week, you say.
I love every bit about this. It is forcing tons of us to do more research. It's getting owners really, really active and involved in their leagues.
And it's less prep for the show, too.
Well, there's that. We
got more time.
Yeah, that we love that. We can dive a little bit more deeply. We're going to identify a ton of replacement players, not just in our Take a Chance on Me segment coming up next segment, which we always do give you the nine players that you can pick up, but scattered throughout all of our breakdowns of all of the games, you're going to hear names of players that are going to get starting grades that normally would not. We'll talk about those guys as we go through the show. We will also give you the answers to three tough questions and provide premature speculation about players you'll want to pick up this week that everybody else will be trying to pick up next week. We break down every game fantasy style with letter grades on all the players who matter. We begin, Scott Fish, with the Carolina Panthers at the Giants at the end of last week's game. The Panthers said they were going to try to run the ball more. Are we going to see a Chuba Hubbard-led game plan?
I think we might, and part of it is because Sam Darnold's
been bad.
You know what? He hasn't been that good outside of his rushing, honestly. Mm-hmm. I've talked about this all year. He looks at his first read, and he forces it into double coverage, and it was working out to start the season. And now teams are just intercepting him when he does that.
Or it coincides with the Dan Arnold trade, which is my theory.
He's on the bench. He's no longer startable now that he's not running touchdowns in every week. That's just what happens. DJ Moore, I'm still going to give an A grade to, though, because he just peppers him with targets. How can you not with the tunnel vision that Darnold has for him, averaging over 10 targets per game, 5-plus catches in every game, 70-plus yards in every game. And even if he's triple covered, he's going to target him. So that you love that volume. I'm putting Robbie Anderson on the bench.
You have to. Back-to-back horrible games for Robbie Anderson.
He has 29 targets in the last three games, and he has done nothing with them except for one last ditch effort touchdown at the end of one game. That's all
he's basically done. And a bunch of drops.
Yeah.
It's been a bad run for Robbie Anderson.
It's kind of surprising considering that was the connection from the Jets. Was the one good thing about the Jets a couple years ago was that connection.
I was optimistic going into the season Robbie Anderson would be helpful.
Right.
It's anything but.
So were the Panthers when they paid him
a boatload of guaranteed money.
Yes. Yikes.
Yeah. I don't have any of the other wide receivers. No. Terrace Marshall is out, but you're not going to start shy or anything. On the running game, it's really all Hubbard is what it is, and it's a B grade here. He'll be startable as long as McCaffrey's out, 17-plus touches in back-to-back games. All other backs behind Chuba Hubbard have had 5 total touches in the last 2 games. It's just all him. He gets all the work. So I have a B grade on him. The Giants have allowed the 4th most combo yards to backs, along with 6 touchdowns in 6 games. The 4 backs that have touched the ball 17 times against the Giants, their average stat line is 110 yards and a score. You could almost talk me into an A on that.
Oh, I bet.
You almost could, especially during the bi-apocalypse. Let's go over to the other side. I have Daniel Jones on the bench. Everybody is injured for him, and he's had back-to-back really, really low yardage games with no touchdowns and a bunch of turnovers. You got to put him on the bench still. Sterling Shepard, I had an A grade on him. He popped up on Friday with an injury. It sounds like he's still going to be good to go.
I think he's okay, yes.
So much like Moore on the other side, Shepard is Jones's whoopee, despite the fact nobody on this show knows what a whoopee is. Apparently.
No, still don't. But
Mr. Mom, man, it's a security blanket. 10-plus targets again last week. That is 10-plus targets in 4 of his last 5 full games with Jones. In every one of those five games, Shepard had 7+ catches and 75+ yards. He just gets the ball. Slayton is the only guy, really. It's Tony.
Shepard.
Tony's out. No, on the other side, Slayton, the other wide receivers.
Okay, yes.
Sorry. Slayton's the only other guy, and you have him on the bench because Tony's out. Golladay is likely out. Pettis got 11 targets last week, but I am not going to trust that. He didn't even catch half of them.
No.
So, and it's a top 12 D against wide receivers. I have Engram on the bench also. I can understand if you need to start him in a week like this, but he's only averaging 5 targets per game over the last 4. He is averaging 5 targets per game over the last 4, but he's only had 1 game over 27 yards.
Wow.
So he's just not getting the yardage or the scores to match it.
By the way, speaking of bad contracts, Kyle Rudolph, $8 million.
He scored a touchdown last week. That was an $8 million touchdown.
That's right. So far it is right now.
Yeah.
Are you saying David Gettleman is not good at his job?
No. I would never say that.
Yeah, it looks like he won that OBJ trade, though.
Mm-hmm.
Over to the running game. Devontae Booker, I have a C grade on. Yes, Dalvin Cook and Ezekiel Elliott tore up the Panthers.
Yeah. But I like Booker here, okay?
Yeah, they're top ranked against the position other than those two games. I will say, they've been bad since they lost Shaq Thompson.
They have.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's when a back gets volume, that back gets paid.
Yep.
And only Zeke and Dalvin Cook had more than 13 carries against the Panthers. And I see a volume game coming for Devontae Booker.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to move it to a B because since Shaq Thompson left, the Panthers are allowing 5.7 yards per carry.
Dang.
That's a lot.
That is a ton. I think that is a B. Thank you.
Yeah, so we got to move that to a B. You know what? That's all I need to say on that. He's going to get all the volume. He's going to get all the pass catching work.
The Washington offense disappointed badly last week against the worst defense in the league, Kansas City. Now they go to the Packers. Do you see a rebound coming from Taylor Heinicke? I did Washington radio this week, and they were talking about benching Heinicke for Kyle Allen. It's come to this that kind of talk is already out there. What do you think this week, Brian?
No, they got to give Heinicke one more chance, and I will too. I'm going to give him a C. Technically not a homecoming game for Heinicke, as he's from Georgia, but apparently he grew up idolizing Brett Favre.
Oh, all right.
Just replaying all the great Brett Favre moments in his backyard at Lambeau Field. So he gets to play at Lambeau Field. So I'm giving Heinicke a C here. He will be missing 2 starters on the O-line, Brandon Scherff and Sam Cosmi. But I think Heinicke can claw his way to at least 250 passing yards, 2 passing touchdowns in this game. I like the matchup for Terry McLaurin. I'm going to give him a B. The Packers are without their top corner, Jaire Alexander.
Mm-hmm.
They are allowing more than a touchdown per game to the wide receiver position. The very comparable Deontay Johnson and Ja'Marr Chase both had big games against the Packers. And the football team should be playing from behind in this one, so I like McLaurin with a B. Certainly has a upside in most matchups. Dyami Brown and Adam Humphries for the other wide receivers.
Adam Humphries is dead to me after what he did to me last week.
He hurt a lot of people last week, me being one. Dyami Brown did have 6 targets last week, which is encouraging, but I got both on the bench in this one, even though it is a somewhat promising matchup. They're both on the bench. But Ricky Seals-Jones,
yes,
the tight end
for
the football team, is not on the bench. Going to give him a B. Has been very active over the last 2 weeks. He's totaled more targets in the last 2 games than Logan Thomas totaled in his first 3 games of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Seals-Jones also has the most red zone targets for Washington on the year already, and over the last 3 weeks, the Packers are top 12 in the most catches and yards surrendered to opposing tight ends, so a strong B for RSJ. And lastly, the running back situation for Washington. Antonio Gibson looks like he will play with the shin injury, and I'm hoping he does because this is a spite game for Antonio Gibson. The Packers selected A.J. Dillon with the 62nd overall pick at running back last year. Gibson went 66th, 4 round picks later. He wants to show Green Bay they made the wrong choice, but not a great matchup. Green Bay allowing just 72 rushing yards and less than a rushing touchdown per game to running backs. They've been far more generous through the air, and that's why I like J.D. McKissic almost a little more. I'm going to give him a C, though, because I can't give him a plus. Right, Charge?
Nope.
Just a C for McKissic. Green Bay top 10 in most receptions allowed to running backs. And again, the game script should favor McKissic, who is the clear top pass-catching back on this team, even when Gibson is healthy. Jarrett Patterson would be interesting If Gibson was a surprise inactive, it's not looking like it'll be that way, but we might talk a little more Jarrett Patterson later in the show. Over to Green Bay pretty quick. It's pretty straightforward. I'm going to give Aaron Jones an A, even if they don't get David Bakhtiari back, left tackle for the Packers, but he could make his return.
Yeah.
It'd be a big boon for Aaron Jones. Now, it's interesting researching this game for the points that Washington has allowed to running backs because they've played Cordarrelle Patterson, who is viewed as a running back by some sites.
Right.
Doesn't matter how you interpret the stats. You're going to start Aaron Jones without a doubt. Going to give him an A. And I'm going to give A.J. Dillon a C for the super needy. Three straight games with double-digit touchdowns for A.J. Dillon. And if Green Bay gains a big lead, we could see a heavy dose of A.J. Dillon. Davante Adams, easy A. Football team allowing 224 yards per game to wide receivers. Adams averaging 130 yards per game over his last five. A for Adams. And Alan Lazard, I'm going to give him a C. Marquez Valdez-Scandling still on IR, and Lazard should start opposite Adams in a solid matchup. I'm starting Lazard in a guillotine league, so go ahead and join me. And Robert Tonyan, basically his last chance.
We've been saying that for a month.
I'm going to give him one last chance here. He gets a C. Washington allowing nearly six catches and 70 yards per game to opposing tight ends. They've also yielded the second most red zone targets to the position, so a C for Robert Tonyan. But if he doesn't get it done, he's cuttable after this week.
I already cut him in all my
leagues.
The most disappointing player in fantasy football that's not injury related.
We knew the touchdowns would regress. We didn't think everything would regress.
Right, exactly. If you'd have told me, 11 touchdowns are going to turn down to, 7, okay, but I'm still going to get 5 catches, 40, 50 yards a game. No, we're getting 2 catches for 20 yards a game and no scores.
And, of course, I must mention A.A. Ron Rodgers gets an A. Washington basically top five in almost everything allowed to quarterback.
Bottom five.
Top five in terms of the most allowed. But, yes, A for Rodgers. Duh.
Bengals take on the Ravens in a game in which the Ravens are under Jim Harbaugh are like 500 against the Bengals of all things. Go figure. And in this one, I think Cincinnati probably ends up winning. Let's start here, guys. Have we gotten to a point that I can just say Ja'Marr Chase is an obvious automatic A?
Yes.
And not even have to give any rationale going forward?
Absolutely.
I just think we're there now, so I'm not going to burn more time on that because you're going to start him no matter what.
Yep.
So let's move on. Joe Burrow gets a B grade. He's one of only two quarterbacks who has thrown multiple touchdowns in every game. It's just him and Patrick Mahomes. That's it. Ravens masterful in shutting down Justin Herbert last week. But Derek Carr, Patrick Mahomes, and Carson Wentz, the 3 weeks before that, averaged 393 yards and 2.3 touchdowns.
That's a lot.
So I don't believe the Ravens really are a shutdown defense like they showed last week. We'll go with the longer history here that says they can be beaten. Chase and T. Higgins, we'll talk about in a second, are better than any of the Ravens cornerbacks who are going to try to stop them, including the best cornerback, Marlon Humphreys. Let's go to T. Higgins. Baltimore secondary, solid. But Higgins matches up on the outside against Anthony Averett, and that is a plus matchup. He's played okay, but he's surrendering 184 yards and a score in the last 2 weeks. So I think we can get some yardage here. And Higgins has been languishing a bit with everything Chase is doing, but this is a plus matchup, and he is startable with a C grade. I know he hasn't been great lately, but we're going to give him one more chance. Speaking of not great lately, Tyler Boyd, I can't start him now until we get very, very plus matchups in the slot. This is not one of them. He's on the bench, and he's droppable in many formats. The other receiver that gets a starting grade, and I'd like to call your attention, and in fact, you know what? That's going to be our sound when we have players who aren't in Take a Chance on Me that you can still go pick up off the waiver wire and start in the bipocalypse. It'll be this oddball. Right there.
Okay.
All right. I'm just going to work it in. The single cowbell. CJ Uzoma.
Okay.
Yes. Ravens have allowed the fourth most tight end yards, the fourth most tight end touchdowns, and the most tight end receptions. And he's been active lately. And he scored 3 touchdowns in the last 3 games. CJ Uzoma, also startable with a C grade. Let's go over to the Baltimore side. You know to start Lamar Jackson. Cincinnati's defense has allowed 304 yards, passing yards per game, to non-rookie passers. And if you exclude the Lions last week, that number jumps to 338 yards per game. Jackson's passing is still not flawless, but nevertheless, the rushing and passing combined makes him an easy A start here, and he's got favorable matchups for his many receivers, who we'll talk about now, including Marquise Brown, another A grade. Brown scored three times against Cincinnati in last year's meetings. He's scored five times already and has a monster game for him if he lines up on the right side against Trey Waynes, who missed all of last year, missed the first few games of this year. He's come back for two games played, and Trey Waynes is giving up a perfect passer rating in his coverage. A grade for Marquise Brown. We've got a C grade on Rashad Bateman. Bateman will be the starter with Sammy Watkins out for this game. Mm-hmm. He got thrown into the fire last week with 45 snaps in his first NFL game. They targeted him six times in that debut game. Bateman overwhelmingly ran from the left side of the field, which puts him on Chidobe Awuzie, the best of the Bengals cornerbacks. Not saying a lot, but at least he's a middle-of-the-pack cornerback. I've got a C grade on Rashad Bateman, who you could start if you were in a pinch.
Should start.
Mark Andrews with an A grade at tight end. Over the last 3 weeks, Andrews leads all tight ends in targets, receptions, and yards. In that same time frame, the Bengals have allowed the 11th most receptions and yards to tight ends. And last week, the stylistically comparable TJ Hockenson totaled 8 catches for 74 yards on 11 targets against Cincinnati last week. So now let's go to the running backs for the Ravens.
Do we have to?
Well, you may need to because
it's
the bye week. Now, conveniently, Latavius Murray's been ruled out of this game. So we have at least a little bit of clarity there. Le'Veon Bell and Devonta Freeman will get most of the work, but Tyson Williams will likely be active for this game. And if you're in a serious pinch, you could start him. All three guys are potentially startable. But let me mention, the Bengals' run defense is shockingly competent. They're giving up 3.8 yards per carry. No back with less than 18 touches against Cincinnati has scored or topped even 30 yards. That's it. So only because it's Bipocalypse, I've got C grades on Bell, Freeman, and if you're in a really deep, deep spot, Tyson Williams on just the presumption that he'll get some carries here, but I don't love him in this matchup.
I think Freeman's the one that looked best last week, personally.
I thought Freeman looked better than Bell, for sure. But I thought Williams looked better than any of these guys the smattering of work that they gave him.
Misses assignments, can't pass block. It's trouble.
It can be trouble. If only they had a quarterback who could run away from pressure, then maybe, you know, you could get Tyson Williams on the field. When we come back, take a chance on me. We're going to give you 9 more players that you can start, put into your lineup, help you out in the Bipocalypse, find out who they are when we return to Fantasy Football Weekly. Not normally in your starting lineup. Find out who they are as we go through some of the players you can pick up off the waiver wire, hopefully, in this, the Bipocalypse. We begin at the quarterback position. And Scott Fish, who you got?
Let me turn on my mic
every week.
It's a running bit now. I need to do it every week to keep it up. I have Matt Ryan. Has multiple touchdowns in 4 straight, averaging 292 yards and 2.5 touchdowns per game since week one. Gets the 9th worst team against quarterbacks in the Dolphins, who may be missing their top 2 cornerbacks once again. That team is allowing 308 yards and 2.2 touchdowns per game. They've also allowed 300-plus and or multiple scores in all their games this year.
Anybody
in 5 straight, sorry.
I fell into the trap of writing off Matt Ryan after his terrible week one.
Yeah,
he's basically like quarterback 10 since then.
I did the same.
Very good. Let's go to you, Brian. You're take a chance with me, quarterback.
I got Tua Tagovailoa at home against the
same
Falcons.
Yeah.
The Falcons shut down Daniel Jones and Zach Wilson. Big whoop for them. But Jalen Hurts, Tom Brady, Taylor Heinicke all went off against Atlanta. I'm putting Tua in the ladder in between those two quarterbacks. Even with the trade rumors swirling around Tua, I think he plays a little angry this week. Like
I would take a little fire from Tua, and he did look good last week.
I like Tua.
I thought he looked good.
Tua
and the Falcons, real quick, also rank bottom 10 in sack rate and own the second worst quarterback hit rate. And 3 of the 5 quarterbacks they have faced ran for at least 40 yards. Only Tom Brady and Zach Wilson did not, so I like Tua this week.
My take a chance for me quarterback is Jameis Winston taking on Seattle. You guys think you have bad secondaries. I'll give you Seattle for mine. Winston has been a boom or bust quarterback, but in his three boom games, he's averaging 3.7 touchdown passes. I would take 3.7 touchdown passes from my bye week quarterback, yeah. Jameis Winston, this week. Seattle hasn't really contained any passer this year. They're giving up 306 yards and almost two passing touchdowns per game. I love matchups around him, including, and we'll talk about this more when we get to the matchup, Marcus Callaway, even his tight ends. He's got some options in the passing game here. Jameis Winston might take a chance at me quarterback. Let's go to the running back position. Scott, who do you have?
I'm going with Ramondre Stevenson. I was very, very, very happy last week seeing him take all of Brandon Bolden's receiving work, except for the league I started Brandon Bolden. I did not like it in that one, but I liked it for Ramondre Stevenson because that means, and Damian Harris is getting none. He has one target in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's par for the course. That's not his game.
So he's got a Jets team that have been torched by pass catching, allowing the fifth most receiving yards to backs. So I think with those pass catching and some carries, maybe a 10-plus touch effort in a week like this, I kind of like Stevenson this week.
Makes some sense. Brandon Bolden may not even play in the game.
Yeah.
That'd be fine. Fine with us. Brian, you're taking a chance on me running back.
I got Las Vegas's Kenyon Drake at home versus the Eagles, who have been very generous to opposing running backs, allowing the fifth most rush yards per game with an 80-yard rusher in each of their last four games to go along with five running back touchdowns. Philly has also yielded the fifth most targets to opposing running backs. Now, I know Josh Jacobs is the lead back, but he is so very meh. And Kenyon Drake, only six touches last week, but he turned them into 73 combo yards and two touchdowns. The Raiders need to get Drake in space behind that awful O-line. He showed what he can do last week. I think he gets 10-plus touches this week in a positive matchup. I like Kenyon Drake.
I'm going to give you two guys from the same team.
That's nobody cheating.
Nobody wants to. I've got my official guy, and okay, I got my backup
guy. I'm just kidding. Go.
Nobody wants a Houston running back. I don't want a Houston running back, but look, these are tough times. Tough times need desperate solutions. Mark Ingram is coming off a 16 and an 18 carry game.
Yeah.
Now, he did nothing with the 16 and the 18 carries, but here comes Arizona and their crappy run defense giving up 130 rushing yards per game and 5 yards per carry. So if he's going to get 16 or 18 carries again, Mark Ingram could get to 200 rushing yards and maybe gets a touchdown in there. Or maybe, and here's where 1B comes in, maybe because Ingram did nothing with the 16 and 18 carries, Brian, they go to the revenge card.
There we go.
And let David Johnson go up against his old team. So that, and David Johnson's gotten like almost no use for a series of games.
They're saving him.
Maybe this is it.
Yep.
If you're really in a pinch, you could try him. The recent trends say Ingram, but if you want to throw a dart in the revenge matchup for David Johnson, you could.
Yeah, he's been rocky in the Russian wilderness like this past week, just getting ready for the game.
That could be it. Let's go to the receivers. Scott.
In that same game, I'm going with A.J. Green. A.J. Green has gotten six targets in all but one game and topped five catches in three of the last four, topped 65 yards in three of the last four.
Mm-hmm.
He scored in every other week. So you're looking at a five-catch, 65-yard guy with a coin flip chance at a touchdown in a game that Arizona will probably get ahead nice and early. He's going to have something to do with it, I think.
I like it. Let's go to you, Brian. You're take a chance for me, receiver.
I'm going tight end in San Francisco's Ross Dwelly. Now, I'm going to also go out on a limb and try to make a Friends joke here. Even a disgruntled Rachel has to like Ross this week with George Kittle on break.
Oh, boy.
That's awful. The Colts are allowing more than six catches and 60 yards per game to opposing tight ends with four total touchdowns allowed to the position. And outside of Deebo Samuel, I don't trust Brandon Ayuk, Mohamed Sanu, or Travis Benjamin as the second option for Jimmy G. It's going to be Ross Dwelly this week against the Colts.
Remember when Trent Sherfield was a thing for 1 minute?
Oh, yeah.
I remember that, too. I love my take a chance on me receiver. He's available in, I'm not looking right now, but I'm going to guess 98% of leagues.
Oh, boy.
Tyler Johnson, Bucks receiver against Chicago. He will be a starter with Antonio Brown ruled out of this game. And when Brown was ruled out in week three, Tyler Johnson saw 34 snaps, which was the same number Scotty Miller had. They each had 34 snaps. But Miller's out on this game, too. In fact, the only three receivers who are expected to be active for this game are Evans, Godwin, and Tyler Johnson. Here come the Bears. So let's break down that for a minute. The Bears have one really good cornerback, Jalen Johnson. Last week, Johnson traveled with Devontae Adams. He's going to do that this week with Mike Evans. And that's going to leave Tyler Johnson on Kendall Vildor. We love to pick on Kendall Vildor on this show. Pro Football Focus ranks him as cornerback 89. He's allowing a passer rating of 130 in his coverage. Sometimes you can tell a book by its cover, and Kendall Vildor has a happy ending for Tyler Johnson.
I haven't read Harry Potter, but was he the bad guy? In
Harry Potter? As a matter of fact, he was.
Kendall Vildor?
Okay. Let's talk about Jets taking on the Patriots, Scott. I don't want any part of the passing game for the Jets, but I am interested in what you think about Michael Carter, who's coming on playing pretty well lately, and whether you think Carter has a matchup that's usable against the Patriots.
I absolutely do. I actually have a B grade on Carter. I know that he didn't do great in the first matchup against the Patriots, but you have to remember, in that game, Johnson and Coleman stole 17 touches from him. Since then, Carter has taken over that job and really taken the lion's share. Those two backs have only combined for 24 touches total since that game.
Yeah.
That's three games, eight touches apiece in three games. It's Carter's backfield now. That the New England Patriots are allowing about 30 running back touches per game. I have trouble believing that Carter's not going to get dang near that 20 marker.
Mm-hmm.
And he does factor into the passing game. He does split goal line work, which is annoying, but I have a B grade on him. I did put a C grade on Jameson Crowder. I'm sorry.
That's fine.
I do have Wilson on the bench. I have Corey Davis and his inconsistency on the bench, and he was terrible against the Patriots the first time around. But Jameson Crowder has 15 targets in his last two games, his only two games since returning from injury. If he's going to keep getting that 7 to 8 target thing, I'm going to like him here with Wilson. The first time around, the slot guy, Berrios, had 7 for 73 against the Patriots.
Yeah.
So I think, and 4 of the 6 slot guys against the Patriots went for 55 plus. So I think there's some room here for Jameson Crowder.
Okay. You know what? I'm going to give him that.
Okay. Okay. On the other side, Mac Jones I have on the bench. The Jets are the second best against quarterbacks, only second to Buffalo, which is crazy to me. I did not expect that. Mostly because they've only allowed 4 passing touchdowns all season.
Wow.
That's not a lot. Maybe teams just don't need to they get up with the run game and they just run too much. In the passing game, also in the receiving game, I have Jakobi Meyers with a C grade. He finally scored, as we called on this show last week.
And
it got called back.
Yes.
The last time I got that happy for someone and then immediately became that sad, Gary Anderson was lining up for a kick. another 6 target day, though, for him. You can see it with his teammates that they really wanted him to get that one.
I think they're going to really try to make it happen here. I need that in one of my guillotine leagues badly.
I think he's got a 4 to 5 catch, 40 to 50 yard floor. So I gave him the C grade.
All right.
I have Bourne on the bench, Jets top 5 against wide receivers. He was saved by that 75 yard touchdown. He's not getting anything. Hunter Henry, the only tight end the Patriots have. I give a B grade to. I got no reaction from Charge on that. I'm very impressed. had 42 yards against these Jets in week 2. He's had 30-plus yards and or a score in all 6 games. He scored in 3 straight. And the Jets were just destroyed a couple weeks ago by a tight end in the Falcons to the tune of 189 yards and 2 scores to Kyle Pitts and Lee Smith and Hayden Hurst. And maybe it gave Bill a blueprint on how, you know?
He needs a blueprint.
Yes, he needs a blueprint. B grade on Henry, the only tight end for the Patriots. Damian Harris, I have an A grade on. He's back to his bell cow role. He does get the goal line touches. Saw 19 touches in the first game between these two. Jets are 4th worst against running backs. They've allowed 6 touchdowns in the last 4 weeks, and all 4 backs topped 80 yards. I got an A grade on him. I think he's gonna ball out here, and there will be just enough room for Stevenson, who is my take a chance on me player.
Yeah, I like it. Let's take a break. As a reminder, we're still forming guillotine leagues. If you want to try the freshest new way to play fantasy football, the premise is pretty straightforward. Instead of playing head-to-head, each week the low-scoring team gets cut, all their players go to the waiver wire, and the rest of us build our rosters over the course of the season. All you have to do is not finish last. Be the final team standing, and you win the whole thing.
Drafting this week, fascinating, because Austin Eckler, Dalvin Cook,
where do you take these bye players? Yeah. Normally, they're shoo-ins for the first round.
Yep.
Where do you take guys like them? Mm. Oh, fascinating. If you can crack the code, you'll get a big leg up on the competition in your guillotine league, guillotineleagues.com. We'll come back to Falcons taking on the Dolphins. We already told you about a lot of the players we like, but does Cordarrelle Patterson keep his hot streak going? Find out when we come back. Welcome back to Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Ciarci and GuillotineLeagues.com. Brian Johnson, GuillotineLeagues.com, and our old friend Scott Fish.
Old friend. It was my birthday this last week.
Yeah, how about that?
42 now.
42, dang.
Yeah, man. Meaning of life. We figured it out this year, right?
Yeah, that's right. This is the year you get it all figured out. Yep. I love it.
Perfect.
I get that reference. Everybody should, frankly. It should be mandatory reading.
Little Douglas Adams for you.
Yes. When my daughter was probably 12. We read together every night from the time she was born up until the time she was about 13 is when it finally petered out. But by the end, we were reading, fairly adult books like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Watching her read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and just getting slayed by it was so fun, right? She's trying to read it. And then, as she's reading the jokes and then just dying of laughter. God, it was great. Oh, Marvin Kilder.
Man.
Marvin's one of the great literary characters of all time. All right. Falcons take on the Dolphins, Brian. You've already given us a bunch of people that you like in this game, and we've already talked about Matt Ryan and others. I'd like to start with Cordarrelle Patterson, running back Cordarrelle Patterson in this matchup.
You know I want to start with someone else, but okay.
That's
I'll appease
right.
you and start with Cordarrelle Patterson.
Yes.
Whether you want to call him a running back, wide receiver, whatever, I'm just giving a B in every matchup until he wets the bed. Right now he's on pace for 85 catches, over 1,000 yards, 13.5 receiving touchdowns, and then 600 rushing yards and 4 rushing touchdowns. I don't know how you bench this guy right now. You just have to play him until he disappoints. So an easy B for Patterson. Over to my true love, Kyle Pitts. Going to give him an A. Pitts has an A dot, average depth of target north of 10 yards. As predicted, basically playing wide receiver, taking more than 70% of his snaps from the slot or outside. He's only scored once so far, but his 8 red zone targets are currently third among tight ends, and he's only played in 5 games, so that's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
The Dolphins are a neutral matchup on paper, but their tight end competition hasn't been great. They did surrender 3 combined touchdowns to the fantasy-relevant tight ends they faced. Those were Dawson Knox and Mo Alie-Cox. I am tempted to take a flyer on Atlanta's actual tight end, Hayden Hurst, but he's on the bench. But Kyle Pitts, wide receiver 2 for the Falcons, gets an A. Wide receiver 1 is back. Calvin Ridley, going to give him an A. Miami will likely be without starting cornerbacks Byron Jones and Xavier Howard. Their third best cornerback, who I should have pulled up his name, he's likely out now. He got injured on Friday.
Mm.
Just trust me, he's going to be out too. So they're very short on corner in Miami. So an A for Ridley. The Dolphins are allowing more than 268 yards per game to wide receivers, and that was with all the starters.
Yeah, right.
And now they're all out. So
now, if you were to ask me to name one player that could have the biggest turnaround from like pre and post bye, Calvin Ridley.
Yeah.
I mean, just, the opportunity for him to be so much better than what we've gotten right now. And he hasn't done anything wrong. Just feels like it hasn't quite all come together.
Yep.
It all starts right here.
Yeah,
I think he's sitting on a gigantic game this week, as you said. A grade for him, and going forward, I like him.
If you're still able to execute a trade, he's someone I would go after tonight.
Agreed.
Mike Davis, I'm going to give him a B. I know that sounds a little crazy, but he's been playing more than 70% of the snaps. He's been averaging 15-plus touches over his last 4 games. Just hasn't been producing much, but that should change against the Dolphins, who are second worst against running backs from a fantasy perspective, allowing 158 combo yards and 1.5 total touchdowns to the position. So I'm looking for a big bounce back for Mike Davis here. He gets a B. And lastly, for Atlanta, Matt Ryan was Fish's take a chance on me quarterback. Love that call as well. Over to the Dolphins side, I'm going to start with Mike Gesicki here. Going to give him a B. Now, he has taken 16 inline snaps all season, which means 94% of his snaps have come from the slot or the outside. He's more of a wide receiver than Kyle Pitts is.
He's had to be with all those injuries.
Yeah, no kidding. That said, Atlanta has not allowed more than 42 yards to any opposing quote-unquote tight end, but they did surrender 3 total touchdowns to the very comparable Rob Gronkowski and Dallas Goedert. So I love Gesicki this week with a B. And you got to love Jalen Waddle. Just a B. I'll give him an A. We'll talk about Devontae Parker and Preston Williams in a minute if those two are out. But right now, just a B for Waddle. 13 targets last week in London. 2 touchdowns. A true superstar in the making. It looks like Miami knew what they were doing when they took him over Devontae Smith. Jalen Waddle, that is. He was the very next pick after Ja'Marr Chase, by the way. 6th overall pick, but looks like a home run so far. The Falcons are yielding 20 targets per game to opposing wide receivers and allowing 170 yards and 1.5 touchdowns per game to the position. So a B for Waddle. I'm going to give Devontae Parker or Preston Williams a C, who's ever looks healthier on game day.
Mm-hmm.
But if both are ruled out, I'll bump up Waddle to an A from a B. But it really hinges on Parker and Williams. I think Parker should be a go with the shoulder injury.
Yeah.
I'm a little more worried about Williams with the groin. So I'll give Parker the C and Williams on the bench for now. Tua was my take a chance on me quarterback in this one. And lastly, at running back, Myles Gaskin. Got to put him on the bench.
How do you? Oh, man.
Unless he's the only warm body you have at running back. But
two,
he did not.
So, in the last three games, 2 horrible games and 1 really good one.
I mean,
and what are you supposed to do with that?
He was out-touched by Salvin Ahmed, who had 8 touches last week. So you cannot trust Gaskin.
The only upside there is the Atlanta's bottom 10 against in receiving work to backs, and Gaskin just 2 weeks ago had like 10 catches.
He's a natural pass catcher. They should throw to him more than they do, but they don't.
If you're in a pinch, which many are.
Chiefs take on the Titans, and it should be a fantastic game. Mahomes, Hill, and Kelce, all obvious A's that do not require any extrapolation. I'll just mention this. Hill and Kelce, who came into this week kind of banged up. Both practice Friday. They both are going to go. Andy Reid said they're going to start, so you're safe keeping them in your lineup.
Mm-hmm.
The only guy that you're really not sure about maybe is Darrell Williams. The Titans are far more vulnerable through the air than they are on the ground, and I don't think Williams is going to see the 20 carries he got last week. Any Chiefs back, has only seen 15 carries one other time this season. So I just don't think Williams gets a lot of work here. And the fact that he's just getting 3.4 yards per carry, he's not great. So I think you're really hoping for a short touchdown opportunity, which it's the Chiefs. They get the ball inside the 5 a lot. So that can happen, and that's your C grade.
They lead the league in red zone trips by a mile.
That doesn't surprise me a bit. So C grade on Darrell Williams. We'll hope for a touchdown. The other wide receivers, and one of these guys is probably the same thing I said last week. One of these guys is going to chip in. Good luck knowing who it is. I don't know. They probably can't tell you for sure who it's going to be. It'll just play out in game. But Josh Gordon, Mecole Hardman, Byron Pringle, DeMarcus Robinson. Last week was Robinson who scored. It's nothing but a guessing game. You're probably not going to get it right. So they're all on the bench.
Yep.
Let's go to Tennessee.
That's exactly what it is.
Derrick Henry's obviously. I'll note that tackle Taylor Lewan's out for this game. And so, you know, we could have somewhat diminished results here, but Chiefs ranked 29th in rushing yards allowed. This might be the worst overall defense in the league. And here comes Derrick Henry. Obviously you're going to start him. It's amazing what we're seeing right now. On pace, by the way, Scott, not only to set the all-time rushing record, he's on pace because of the 17th game.
Yeah.
He's on pace to break the yards from scrimmage record.
Ooh.
In that 17th game, because he's catching now.
I did see it was like 2,200 some yards and 29 touchdowns or 28 touchdowns, something like
unbelievable.
That. He's on pace for.
Ryan Tannehill gets a B. Normally, Tannehill labors under Derrick Henry heavy game plans that reduces throwing opportunities. Tennessee averages just 33 passes per game. That's 20th in the league. And any of the short touchdowns that Tannehill would throw usually just get vacuumed up by Derrick Henry as well. And while Henry's undoubtedly going to be a huge part of this passing, a huge part of the offense, Patrick Mahomes is going to stress this defense out. And at some point, it's very possible Tennessee's behind by over a touchdown. Mm-hmm. And Tannehill's going to have to do some extra passing in this game. Not maybe, I'm not saying he's going to throw his arm out of socket like 50 times, but I think we're going to see an uptick in passing. And the Chiefs' pass defense is bad. They've given up the eighth most passing yards and multiple quarterback touchdowns in four of the past five games. I think Tannehill finds his way to two touchdowns in this game. B grade. A.J. Brown, Julio Jones get B grades. A.J. Brown has sworn off Chipotle.
Yep.
Very important to factor into your fantasy.
Feeling better.
That's right. Julio Jones on Friday said he will play, which is great news. Strong opportunity for both guys. This is a Kansas City secondary that's given up six receiver touchdowns in the last four games. And Brown and Jones are far better than any of the Kansas City cornerbacks, including Charvarius Ward, if he finally actually comes back from injury and plays. And big plays are always a possibility against Kansas City because their safety, Daniel Sorensen, is brutal, allowing the most passing yards of any safety in the league. So they are both in with solid B grades. Chester Rogers, by the way, ruled out of this game.
Mm-hmm.
Will not go. All right, final matchup of this segment is Lions taking on the Rams. Scott?
I'm sorry, Brian, but even though it's a revenge game for Jared Goff, I'm putting him on the bench. I'm sorry. I just can't. Under 220 yards and no scores in three of his last four games. He's just, even if his coach wants him to step it up, and it's a perfect script for garbage time. What does that mean? 240 yards, 280 yards, maybe one score? I just can't with Jared Goff this week. I am giving a C grade to Amon-Ra St. Brown. Raymond had an extra catch in about 10 more yards last week, but they tied in targets, and Amon-Ra's led the team in targets in three straight. He leads the team in red zone targets in that span as well. And they're going to be mostly playing from behind, and he led the team in targets playing down two scores last week. After they were down two scores, he led the team in targets. So I gave him a C grade, a B grade for Hockenson. As I said last week, don't worry. I told you not to worry.
You did.
7 for 73. Non-Kelsey tight ends have down weeks, too. It's a middle-of-the-road matchup, not a smash spot, so just a B there. DeAndre Swift, I have an A grade for, even though he's questionable. He'll be fine to go. That was a very Minnesota go on me. Swift has 9 first half receptions for 39 yards this year.
Wow.
He has 34 receptions in the second half of games.
Jeez.
So it's because they keep getting down, and he's the passing down back. Mm-hmm. Maybe you should use him in the first half. It's something he's very, very good at.
Jamal Williams has played well, but he's being largely phased out of this offense
because of
that exact problem.
Last week against the Bengals, he disappeared. This is a middle-of-the-road matchup, but the Rams have allowed the 9th most receptions and 9th most receiving yards to running backs. Great spot for Swift. I got an A grade on him. I'm giving Williams the C grade back again. He's had 10-plus touches in every other game except for last week where he – I don't know if he's truly been phased out or not.
I'm nervous.
And I wrote right in here, a lot of garbage time duty, and it's the binado. Like, you need options. I'm going to give him the C grade.
I'll give him one of these, but I'm nervous.
Purely because of the binado.
Regardless of what happens with Williams this week, and I agree with the C. Like, say he has a bad game, still someone I'm going to keep my eye on to trade for or pick up, because as the season goes on, it gets deader and deader for Detroit.
Part of the problem,
Lester are going to want to use DeAndre Swift in that scenario, right?
Part of the problem is last week, the Bengals run the slowest paced game in the NFL, and that led to less touches last week.
Okay.
On the other side, the Rams side, Stafford and Kupp, I think they're obvious A's at this point. They're just putting up too many points. I'm giving a B grade to Woods. He turned back into the pre-squeaky wheel Woods last week. But second receivers are averaging three catches for over 50 yards and more. Mm. So B grade for Woods. C grade on Higbee. He's had four games with five or more targets. Lions have allowed a handful of 4 to 5 catch, 40 to 60 yard tight end days. That's likely what Higbee will do. Henderson, A grade. Lions, worst team against running backs in the league. They're bottom 10 in most categories. So I got Henderson with an A grade and Michelle with a C grade.
Yeah.
I think he can get work too.
I think he can too. Garbage time work for Sony Michelle, who you could pick up in the bipocalypse.
It's going to be a 30-plus day for those running backs. Touch day.
Absolutely. I'm hoping we get Cooper Kupp into the MVP conversation here.
He leads in targets, receptions, and yards.
Could end up happening at some point. When we come back, hour number two of Fantasy Football Weekly begins with three tough questions. You can play along, see if you can go 3-0 on Fantasy Football Weekly when we return for hour number two. Bye-bye. Number two, Fantasy Football Weekly. Welcome back. Paul Charchian from GuillotineLeagues.com. Brian Johnson and Scott Fish, my co-host today. Gentlemen, this is a segment we call Three Tough Questions. We traditionally begin
tough
right
question
here.
Question number one.
Is Miles Sanders a sabotage drop? Scott Fish, what do you think?
He was only playing 64% of the snaps the first 4 weeks. He's played 78% in the last two. The last two weeks, they played the Panthers and Bucks, two of the best teams out there as far as against running backs. So, yeah, he didn't put up a lot of points. But he leads the NFL in broken tackle every 5.7 attempts. He's averaging 4.7 yards per carry. I'm going to flip it on you.
Okay.
And I'm going to say, you should go buy him now. You can get him next to nothing. Right now, people are picking up guys like Felton, and Le'Veon Bell was the most picked up player on Friday. You're not sabotaging anyone with this move. You're sabotaging yourself. You're helping other people by giving him a good player. He only has two opponents left on his schedule that rank above average in adjusted points allowed to running backs. It's a great schedule going forward, and the OC talked this week about how they want to get him more involved and more going. I said,
Brian,
go buy him.
Is
don't step
Miles
him.
Sanders a sabotage drop?
I don't have much to add to that. I don't think I possibly could add to that, but I agree with Fish. He can't sabotage drop Miles Sanders just yet. We're going to talk about his matchup very shortly, and I like it this week. Just to sort of tack on to what he said, I would go look to add Kenneth Gainwell, who a lot of people probably gave up on because he was on Sanders' heels, essentially, looking to take his job.
Yes.
But Sanders played like 85% of the snaps last week, so go grab Gainwell in case something happens to Sanders, and he can just drop him for whoever. But the answer to sabotage drop for Sanders is no for me.
You guys sniffed this one out awfully well. It is exactly as Scott described it. This is actually a buy low moment on Miles Sanders for all the reasons you mentioned. He's getting way more use now. Just the regression of use. The Eagles running backs over the last month are averaging 10 rushes per game. That's ridiculous.
And two were Bucks and Panthers.
It's going to come back to normalcy or something resembling normalcy anyway. And we will see a positive regression in Miles Sanders carries. You always want to buy on the dip. We're at the dip.
Yes.
We're buying on Miles Sanders right now. Well done, you two.
Tough question number two.
Who is the top dynasty or empire wide receiver? Brian, what do you think?
Now, if you're going into a startup draft, which is what you're pretty much assuming here, it's a three-way race between Ja'Marr Chase, CeeDee Lamb, and Justin Jefferson. They're all amazing players. I'm not going to break down their air yards or their separation fat, whatever. It comes down to age when it comes to dynasty. Chase is basically a year younger than CeeDee Lamb and Justin Jefferson. He turns 22 in March. CeeDee and Justin Jefferson turn 23 in the spring. So I'm going to remove Jefferson from the equation, though, just because his quarterback beyond this year, kind of an unknown. It could be Kirk Cousins. Mm-hmm. It could not be Kirk Cousins. And you want your top dynasty receiver tied to an elite quarterback. So we're going to have to remove Jefferson from the equation. So that leaves Ja'Marr Chase with Joe Burrow and CeeDee Lamb with Dak Prescott. Kind of a tie there for me. And what's going to break it is T. Higgins is more of a threat to targets to Ja'Marr Chase and whatever Amari Cooper or whoever the wide receiver two is going to be down the line in Dallas. So therefore, my answer is CeeDee Lamb is the top dynasty wide receiver.
CeeDee Lamb. Scott, who is the top dynasty or empire wide receiver?
So Brian basically said a lot of what I was going to say. You and I both had CeeDee Lamb as this answer in the preseason. I think Matt had A.J. Brown or something like that, or I don't remember. Maybe it's Justin Jefferson. But his point on Brian's point on Justin Jefferson is right. We saw what happened with AJ Brown this year. When your quarterback starts to trail off, that could be, you know, if we don't have Kirk Cousins with the Vikings in a couple of years, that could be Jefferson. DK's off the list now. It's that three-man race. You could make an argument for Hill or Kupp. Because even in dynasty leagues, you want to look at that 2 to 3 year window.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm going with the younger guy. I love CeeDee Lamb, but I think Chase is just Burrow's boy. He's one of only two wide receivers to hit 500 plus yards and five touchdowns in his first six games. Mm-hmm. The other was Randy Moss. He's on a great pace, and I think he's proven he can be the alpha in that offense. I love them both. We're really splitting hairs here, but I'm just going to say Chase. I'll go.
The correct answer is Ja'Marr Chase, operating at historic rookie levels already, including the deep receiving production. Compared to Justin Jefferson's historic year last year, Chase is averaging per game one more catch, five more yards, and double the production of Justin Jefferson in his rookie year. He has a fantastic young quarterback with whom he can spend the next decade. And the suggestion that I like T. Higgins, but it's clear T. Higgins is no threat to Chase. Amari Cooper is very good. I think your T. Higgins is a bigger threat than Amari Cooper is unfounded and unsubstantiatable.
For the next several years?
Yes.
All right.
And I like T. Higgins,
okay.
I think okay,
they're going to be a heck of a 1-2 punch.
It's clear that T. Higgins, in fact, we should talk about T. Higgins the next week. Man, tough question number three. What is the appropriate level of concern for Darren Waller? None? Some? Or a bowel-loosening level of existential dread? Scott, you're first.
Stop it, Charge. Stop it. Last week with Hawkinson, this week with Waller.
Yes.
Same question. I'm telling you, it's none. It's none. Hawk went 8 for 74 on 11 targets the week after you asked this question. Mm-hmm. So I think you're just reverse jinxing these people into good games at this point. But Waller, yes, Waller only has one top eight finish at tight end, and that was, you know, when he got 19 targets. But he's playing 89% of the snaps. He's running routes on nearly 90% of his routes. He has 9 red zone targets. He's had at least one of those every week. Mm. At least 7 targets in all but last week. And last week was because they only had 56 total plays. Like they did not have a lot of snaps for him to do that.
Yes.
For people listening, 56 snaps last week. The Raiders were averaging 72 snaps per game the 5 weeks prior. So it was quite a drop off. 24% target share in that offense. You should not worry about him. Keep starting.
Correct answer is none. Is what you're saying.
None at all.
None for Darren Waller.
It was a long roundabout way to go.
Brian, what's the appropriate level of concern for Darren Waller? None, some, or blowed?
I got to go some based on his ADP, and that's ADP if you're drafting with me, because I'd be taking him early second round like every draft I was in. And if he was there later in the second, I would scoop him up wherever possible. He's not performing at that level, but the tight end is an absolute wasteland. But the Raiders are leaning on Henry Ruggs a little more than I thought, and Hunter Renfrow. Those guys are a little more reliable than we thought. I thought Waller would have been a lock for 10, 11 targets week in and week out. But last year he had a little lull at this time of the year, and he just went bonkers later in the season. So I've got some, but it's really very little. But I got to go with some. It's not none, just some.
On the record, Brian Johnson hates Darren Waller.
Never.
Waller hasn't been bad, but he also hasn't been particularly good since the opener. He's hasn't topped 65 yards since the opener. He has scored once since the opener. He's trailing guys like Dawson Knox and Dalton Schultz in fantasy points. Now, ironically, what's killing Waller is that, unlike last year, all the other receivers for the Raiders don't suck.
Yeah, Ruggs is having a really good breakout
year. Ruggs, Brian Edwards, Hunter Renfrow have given Derek Carr capable targets. Mm-hmm. That's not going to change. These are young players who are only getting better. Waller remains an above-average tight end. He's very talented, but he is now sharing the ball with a lot of other players, and that means he's going to have a lot of box scores like what we've seen right now, which are good, not great. He's going to have some massive games, undoubtedly, but they're not going to come in the kind of quantity they were last year, and compared to his average draft position in the second round, there should be some level of concern.
Wow. Wow. No words at this point.
You're flabbergasted right now. I know. Brian, Eagles take on the Raiders. We were just talking about Miles Sanders, so let's make a seamless...
And Darren Waller.
Let's make a seamless transition here. What do you think about Miles Sanders with all the extra usage he's gotten the last few weeks in this matchup with Las Vegas?
Yeah, I said I like the matchup this week. That's why I'm giving him a B. Opposing backs are averaging nearly 8 targets per game against the Raiders, who are also allowing more than 100 yards per game on the ground to running backs. And, you know, last week, Philly fell into a negative game script where we thought we'd see more Kenny Gainwell, but we did not. So I'm going to be with Miles Sanders and Gainwell back on the bench until we see him back in the rotation. Well, I would not be dropping him, though. He's still a very strong hold for me, but a bench grade for Gainwell this week. Not a bench grade for Dallas Goedert. Give him a B, borderline A. The Eagles are top 10 in tight end targets, and now with Zach Ertz gone, that target share is essentially all for Goddard, and the Raiders are top 5 in the most catches and yards allowed to opposing tight ends. They've also surrendered 4 tight end scores over the last 3 weeks, so a B for Goddard, borderline A, but I'm just going to go with the safe B here. Not-so-safe C for Devontae Smith. Raiders have been tough on wide receivers, allowing just 129 yards and half a touchdown per game to the position, so a C for Smith puts all the other wide receivers for Philly easily on the bench for me. But Jalen Hurts, essentially unbenchable. It doesn't matter the matchup or how bleak it looks going into the fourth quarter of the game. He's going to get you 20 points.
Finds almost all running.
He's the only quarterback to finish top 12
every week.
Believe it. So a B for Jalen Hurts. He's got A upside every week with the rushing, which also gives him a safe C floor. You got to love Hurts in fantasy. Maybe not so much in reality.
No, the people in Philly are like, oh, God, we got to go back to the draft.
We don't care about how the Eagles turn out here on Fantasy Football Weekly when it comes to wins and losses. So a B for Hurts. Over to the Raiders side. Josh Jacobs, just a C. I said I like the matchup when talking about Kenyon Drake and Taycom. The Eagles have been very generous with opposing backs, allowing the 5th most rush yards with an 80-yard rusher in each of their last 4 games to go along with 5 running back touchdowns. But Jacobs, just not very good. And neither is Oakland's offensive line.
It's the running. The line is so bad. The run blocking in particular.
But he's not dynamic.
Pass blocking is okay. Run blocking, I think, is dead last by Pro Football Focus.
Yeah, but Jacobs just not dynamic enough to make up for the lack of run blocking ability in Las Vegas. So just to see in what should be a positive matchup. That's why I have Kenyon Drake. Might take a chance on me running back. I think he sees double-digit touchdowns would be nice, but not that high. So a C for Drake, who's might take a chance on me running back. And yes, we are still starting Darren Waller with confidence, Scott, especially this week. Don't worry. Even though there's some concern long-term, not this week. He gets an A. Been somewhat quiet recently, but he should pop off this week. The Eagles have allowed the 4th most receptions and the most touchdowns to opposing tight ends with 5. So an A for Darren Waller. Just a C, though, for Henry Ruggs and Hunter Renfro. Henry Ruggs should see Darius Slay in shadow coverage. But again, he might be on Waller because he covered Kelsey last week.
Yeah, you know, when they played the Chiefs, he was on Kelsey quite a bit, and Kelsey struggled that day. He only had 4 catches for 23 yards. If Slay jumps on Waller a bunch, there's a little concern there, but
that would open up Ruggs for perhaps some deep downfield receptions.
In that game, Tyreek Hill had like 180 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Did he really? Wow.
So the speedy outside guy in this one, if that same situation plays out.
Yeah, unlikely Ruggs gets full-on shadow coverage from Slay, so he gets a C. So does Hunter Renfro, who is 2nd on targets on the team, only behind Darren Waller. Not an ideal matchup. Eagles allowing just 11 catches, 130 yards per game to wide receivers, but Renfro and Ruggs both get a C from me. And lastly, Derek Carr, going to give him a B. Tom Brady, Dak Prescott, and Patrick Mahomes combined to average more than 270 passing yards and nearly 3.5 passing touchdowns against the Eagles this year. Carr isn't quite on their level, but 250 passing yards and 2 touchdowns seems like a safe floor with a ceiling of 300 yards and 3 touchdowns type game in the cards for Carr. So B.
Makes sense.
Derek Carr.
When we come back, I want to talk about the Bears versus the Bucks. It's a fascinating matchup for Justin Fields, averaging just 21 passes per game. That's the lowest of any starter. But here comes the Bucks, who see the most passes of any team. Something's got to give. We'll tell you what to expect from that Chicago passing game when we come back to Fantasy Football Weekly. Welcome back to Fantasy Football Weekly, brought to you by GuillotineLeagues.com. New leagues forming all the time. Basically, anytime there's not a game actively being played, we're drafting at GuillotineLeagues.com. It's the freshest new way to play fantasy football. Also, my player ratings available for free. If you missed any part of this show and you just want to go back and look at all of my specific player rankings and even more in-depth information than we can provide in the show, you can go to GuillotineLeagues.com, and that's all free. My co-host today, Scott Fish, Brian Johnson. You'll hear from them in a moment. I'm first up with Bears taking on the Bucks. As I mentioned going into this break, a fascinating matchup for Justin Fields, throwing the fewest passes of any starting quarterback, just 21 per game. That is leather helmet era passing right there. But because nobody can run on Tampa, they're seeing the most passes per game, 42. That is exactly double Fields' normal output. So something's got to give. Mm-hmm. If Matt Nagy and Bill Lazor allow Fields to ratchet up his passing to, let's say, somewhere in between those two, like 34 passing touchdowns, right? Somewhere in that ballpark, that's enough volume to take advantage of a secondary that's missing several key starters. Fields never gets to run the ball, unfortunately, even though he's a gifted runner. They never run him, so that won't be a factor here at all. But I think we can get a little something done through the air on enough targets and just one or two deep connections. That might be good enough. So I'm giving a C grade in the bipocalypse for Justin Fields. Now, let's go to his receivers. Darnell Mooney, one of my favorite sneaky plays. Tampa's allowed the fourth most wide receiver receptions. Mooney already getting a team-leading 8 targets per game. So I think with the extra passing, he gets up to like 10 targets, double-digit targets in this game. Richard Sherman, dead. He was replacing Carlton Davis, dead. Now they're going with former undrafted free agent Dee Delaney, a cornerback. He's already allowed 2 scores in less than 100 snaps this season, and he does not have anywhere near Mooney's speed. So I've got a B grade on Darnell Mooney. Like Allen Robinson also with a B grade. Buccaneers allowing 192 yards per game to receivers. That is 6th most. And this despite the fact that they face Mac Jones and Jacoby Brissett and Jalen Hurts. These are not great passers. So even though Justin Fields hasn't been a great passer, you know, you can get a little something done here. We are going to likely see a fair amount of Jamel Dean for Allen Robinson, and Dean's good. He's 20th ranked cornerback in the league, but if they flip Robinson to the other side of the field, they can get positive matchups on the Dee Delaney character that I already mentioned. So still like Robinson as well. Be great on him. And here comes another sneaky play for you. Cole Kmet, startable this week. Jimmy Graham is out, and he wasn't a big factor anyway, but this was going to be a positive matchup and a recommended matchup regardless of Jimmy Graham's status. Bucks have allowed 4 tight end scores in the last 4 games. They've allowed the 3rd most tight end receptions, the 4th most tight end scores, and the most fantasy points to tight ends. Cole Kmet has seen 4 and 5 targets over the past 2 weeks, and he's coming off a career-best 49-yard game, trending the right way. Let's try Cole Kmet in a tricky bye week. And lastly, that brings us to Khalil Herbert. So we're assuming pass catching back, we're assuming Damian Williams will remain out. And if Williams is out, that means Khalil Herbert gets almost all the work. But Tampa Bay sees by far the fewest runs. So he's not going to get much of anything on the ground. They're giving up just 40 rushing yards per game and no rushing touchdowns, by the way. But where Herbert can help you out a little bit is through the air. Herbert's got decent hands. Tampa's allowed the 3rd most running back receptions, and if they give up the same 42 receiving yards per game they're averaging, so if Herbert's going to get like all the work in the 40 rushing yards and the 42 receiving yards, that equals a C grade for Khalil Herbert. Now let's go to the Tampa side of this game. Tom Brady's an obvious A. Aside from the dud game in the rain against Bill Belichick, he's been awesome, averaging 360 yards and 3.5 passing touchdowns per game. And even though Chicago's pass defense has been better lately, Brady's got his deep set of receivers and an opportunity, especially against Chicago secondary, missing starting safety to Sean Gibson, who's going to be out in this one. So the deep ball really in play for Brady here, and I like him a lot. I've also got A grades on Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Antonio Brown out for this game, by the way. So for Godwin, running out of the slot, he's going to avoid the one good cornerback that the Bucs have, Jalen Johnson, who's an outside cornerback. Instead, he gets the interior side, which it was originally Marquis Christian as the slot cornerback, and then they went to Duke Shelley, but he's a game-time decision with an ankle injury, and then they've been trying to use Xavier Crawford, a safety-turned-slot cornerback. Disaster move. They're going to hope Duke Shelley can come back, but even then, Chris Godwin against Duke Shelley is an A matchup for Chris Godwin.
Mm-hmm.
Then Mike Evans, coming off the brutal box score last week, but it's all about targets for Evans. When he gets his targets, he's great. And with Antonio Brown out, and Antonio Brown leads the team in targets, Evans is going to get fed, and he's sitting on a big game here. Now, he is going to get shadowed by Jalen Johnson, the Bears' one good cornerback. And he shadowed last week, and he shadowed Devontae Adams. I think he shadows Evans here. But Evans also, in sneaky fashion, he'll run from the slot sometimes. And I still like Evans, and I'm still giving him an A grade, even with Jalen Johnson on him for much of this game. Tyler Johnson was my take a chance on me wide receiver. You can pick him up and start him. I like him a lot in this game. And staying with the passing game, Rob Gronkowski's been ruled out of this game, so it's going to be another coin flip between O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate. O.J. Howard's getting slightly more work, and if you had to pick one, I would pick Howard, but really, it's a coin flip. Bears are one of the best tight end defenses, so I don't think you want to play either one of those guys, and they're on the bench. Lastly, Leonard Fournette. He is now getting virtually all the work. Ronald Jones only saw 3 touches in the first half of last week's game. Gio Bernard just had 2 targets all game. It's all Fournette right now. Bears just allowed Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon to run for 135 combined yards. Bears are worse on the road, giving up 4.5 yards per carry, and they've given up 3 rushing scores to running backs as compared to 0 at home. So I like Fournette with a B grade in that game. All right, let's go to Texans taking on the Cardinals. Scott, I actually turned up a Texan as a take-a-chance-on-me runner.
You did.
Mark Ingram.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about... I took a ton of heat on Twitter this week for this. I'm watching Davis Mills,
yeah.
And last week, and throughout his young
career.
His
last 2 weeks have looked decent.
They have looked decent. Yeah. The guy, he's got an NFL arm. Now, all the decision-making isn't there yet, and he's still a little bit slow to process and other stuff. He really was never meant to start a game as a rookie, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
But that he has an NFL arm. I'm seeing him slinging lasers to the sidelines. He's got a little touch on his deep ball. I know he had 3 picks last week, but one of them for sure was not on him. But Davis Mills is not terrible, and that doesn't mean you have to start him this week.
I feel the same way as you, and it's going to be interesting because Tyrod Taylor should be coming back within the next couple weeks.
Yeah, so that's going to be a tough decision.
Yep. Davis Mills, I do have a C grade on.
All that, I'm glad you do.
Yes, he blew up the Pats and didn't completely turn back into a pumpkin last week. He had over 240 yards, and we'll see another negative game script this week. The Cards allow a little over 230 yards and 1.5 scores per game. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty fair low-end projection for Mills. It's a C grade because we have 4 starters and 2 streamers on bye.
That's right.
I mean, he's going to get bounced for that. A grade for Cooks. As we said, when Cooks did nothing against the Pats, it was Bill shutting him down. He was back to his old ways last week. He has 9-plus catches in 3 of the 5 Mills games.
Yes.
Like, he's getting a lot of volume. So I have an A grade there. Nico Collins, questionable, turned up midweek with a little bit of an ankle injury, but then he progressed in practice. I think he still plays. I still have a C grade on him. He caught 4 balls for 44 yards on 6 targets last week, 57% of the snaps. He's a 6'4", 215-pound, 4'4", 3 runner. He's got 4 to 6 inches and 25 pounds on any of the cornerbacks that can cover him. So he's a good contested catch receiver. Second receivers, Donovan Peoples-Jones, Robert Woods, even Van Jefferson, even K.J. Osborne. A lot of the secondary receivers have done work on the Cardinals. Multiple touchdowns, lots of big games. So I have a C grade on him. On the Arizona side, I think Kyler Murray is pretty obvious A at this point.
Yeah.
If he's not throwing for 3 touchdowns, he's throwing for 300 yards.
I'll mention the running's way down.
It really is.
Yeah.
It's back to his shoulder injury days, really, is what it is. The running's way down.
But the passing's been great.
They've got huge leads. He doesn't need to risk it.
Yeah.
Hopkins, I got an A grade too. He leads the NFL in touchdowns, 10 red zone targets as well. The yards haven't really been there, but I think those will come up. Also in the passing game, Christian Kirk and Rondale Moore. I'm giving Kirk a C grade here. I'm leaving Moore on the bench. They had their snap shares jump up from about the late second quarter when Max Williams went down with the injury.
Yeah.
Their snaps jumped way up. Now comes in Zach Ertz. I think that's where it comes from because Moore and Kirk have been playing in the slot. That's where Zach Ertz is going to jump in, where Max Williams was before those snaps jumped up. I think their snaps go back down, putting Moore back on the bench, Kirk back down to a C-grade level player and kind of a riskier one at that. With Ertz out there, I'm giving him the C-grade. In Williams, Max Williams, four full games, he had two games with five-plus catches. He had two games with 65-plus yards. That's about what Ertz was doing over in Philadelphia. And the Texans have allowed four touchdowns in the last 3 weeks to tight ends. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good spot for Ertz. I'm giving him the C-grade, but I could be talked into a B in his first game there. In the running game, I'm giving Connor the way better grade here than Edmonds. I have the B grade on Connor, the C grade on Edmonds. Edmonds only has 10 carries in the last 2 weeks.
He's healthy.
He's dinged up with a shoulder injury. They've been in the lead, so they don't need to risk that shoulder injury. And they're contenders, so they don't want
to. They're going
to
be in the lead in this game, too.
James Connor's averaging, in games where they lead by 14 points, is averaging 18 touches.
Dang.
And they're 18-point favorites here.
Wow, yeah.
So I got the B grade on Connor, who's going to get a lot of volume. I know he's not getting a lot of yards, but he's getting the goal line work, and he's going to get the touches. So a B grade on Connor, C grade on Edmonds, because he catches passes.
I like it. Brian, Colts take on the 49ers. Carson Wentz has been good. He's been good. Nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody's like comeback player of the year, Carson Wentz. He should be in this conversation. He's been very capable. What do you think of the passing game here? No T.Y. Hilton in all probability. No Paris Campbell against the 49ers.
Yeah, I got to mention that there's an 80% chance of rain in this game with winds around 20 miles per hour expected in San Francisco on Sunday night. So you want to factor that into the passing game. And as you mentioned, Carson Wentz has looked great over his last three games, has completed 69% of his passes while averaging 284 yards and two touchdowns. But I got him on the bench this week. It just does not feel like a smash spot on the road. Bad weather, as you mentioned, probably no T.Y. Hilton, no Paris Campbell. So I'm borderline C on Wentz, but I got him on the bench here. I do at least like Michael Pittman, though, going to give him a B. Speaking of T.Y. Hilton, very brief but effective cameo last week. I was surprised to see him. Poof, he was gone again. He's unlikely to play. As I mentioned, Paris Campbell is still on IR, so Pittman should see a bump in volume against San Fran, who has allowed five wide receiver touchdowns over their last four games, including two 100-yard receiving performances during that same span. So I got a B on Michael Pittman, but, man, I still got to put...
What do you think of little Zach Pascal?
I'm going to say, if you're super desperate...
I think there's a play to be had here.
If you're super desperate for a wide receiver, I kind of like some of our other tight end plays that we've mentioned. Mm-hmm. Ross,
my favorite is you called him little Zach Pascal. Or were you just saying a little?
Well.
Okay, I was going to say he's like 6'2", so he's not exactly little, but...
I'll give little Zach Pascal a dart throw C here based on the numbers on paper that the Niners are allowing to wide receivers. So a C for Pascal. I love me some Big Mac, some Mo Alley-Cox, but he's on the bench this week. Still loses snaps to Jack Doyle.
Doyle got ruled out. So
has he been ruled out? I did not know that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I kind of like him.
I don't like him as much as Ross Dwelly or some of the other tight ends we mentioned. Mo Alley, still two touchdown dependent for me. San Francisco has surrendered just one tight end touchdown all year. That went to TJ Hockenson in week one. Every other opposing tight end performance has been pretty bad. So, I'm tempted. I got to put him on the bench, but I cannot fault you if you have to plug Mo Alley-Cox into your lineup.
They played week one, and Mo Alley-Cox had a goose egg, I think, that week. Oh, no. I'm thinking.
Yeah, they could not have played each other.
No, that's
prior. All right, if it came down to Zach Pascal or Mo Alley-Cox, who you got?
I still got to go Zach Pascal just because the wide receiver numbers, opposing numbers, are softer against San Fran. And Pascal is, like, top 10 in red zone targets among all players this year with the nine.
I know.
So, yeah, Pascal, we'll give him a safer C, all right? You happy? Little Zach Pascal gets a big old C. lastly, for Indy, Jonathan Taylor, going to give him a B. People have been complaining about his usage, but maybe the Colts have this just right. If you've noticed, he's still healthy and effective,
unlike a lot
of the other running backs that aren't Derrick Henry in the league. JT has caught fire recently, averaging 67 more combo yards per game and 7 more yards per touch over his last 3 games compared to his first 3 games. So he's been hot, but San Francisco is a tough matchup. They're allowing the 3rd fewest rushing yards to running backs. They do allow a fair amount of production through the air, 6 catches, 45 yards per game to backs. Naheem Hines will steal some work there, but he's on the bench for me. But Jonathan Taylor, again, is not.
Quinn Nelson may make his return as well. That would be fantastic.
Big-time boon for Jonathan Taylor as well. Over to the San Francisco side, starting with Debo Samuel. He gets an A. He has averaged 10 targets in Jimmy Garoppolo's full games. Jimmy G will make the start in this one. Indy has also allowed multiple touchdowns to wide receivers in 4 of 6 games. The very comparable Tyler Lockett and Hollywood Brown put up at least 100 yards in a touchdown against the Colts. So I love Debo this week. He gets an A. As for the second wide receiver, who is it? Brandon Ayuk, Mohamed Sanu, Travis Benjamin, all gross right now. It's likely Ayuk, but I still need to see something from him before I can put him in a starting lineup unless super desperate. So all other wide receivers are on the bench. But again, Ross Dwelly is not. He was my take-a-chance-on-me receiver this week. The Colts are allowing more than 6 catches and 60 yards per game to opposing tight ends on the year with 4 total touchdowns. So I love me some Dwelly. And lastly, Jimmy Garoppolo, despite the bad weather, we'll give him a C. Colts are allowing 270 passing yards and 2.5 passing touchdowns per game to opposing quarterbacks. And if Jimmy G wants to keep his job beyond this week, he's got to play motivated in primetime. If he doesn't, it's Trey Lance sooner than later, if health permits.
I think you're right about that.
Wait, sorry. I have one more. Elijah Mitchell. Got to mention Elijah Mitchell.
Yeah, exactly. Is he under the radar?
Way under the radar, obviously. He appears to be the guy in the backfield. Again, should get most of the backfield touches, but a tough matchup for Mitchell. Ranked 3rd by Pro Football Focus, the Colts have allowed only 3.3 yards per carry to running backs with 0 running back touchdowns over the last 3 weeks. So just a C for Elijah Mitchell.
It feels like one of those weeks where he's going to be cheap in DFS. Nobody owns him. He's got a matchup on paper that doesn't look very good. And somehow he ends up with a great box score and you wish you had him. Elijah Mitchell. Buy low on Mitchell. He could be the start of the rest of the season. I'm buying low on Elijah Mitchell right now. When we come back, final matchup of the slate is Monday night. It's Geno Smith versus Jameis Winston. We get Geno in primetime back-to-back weeks. We'll tell you what to do about this sticky running back position for Seattle on Monday night when we come back. Football Weekly. Paul Charchian, GuillotineLeagues.com. Brian Johnson, same. Scott Fish. We're here to get you ready for the bipocalypse. We hope we've helped. We've given you a ton of players you can pivot to in a pinch over the course of this show. And if you missed how we were denoting those, it was this, which we were just dropping in throughout the show. So you can go back, listen for that sound, and then you'll know this is a guy I could go get. This is a segment we like to call premature speculation, in which we offer advice about players you can pick up now that everybody else will be trying to pick up next week. Scott Fish, I'll let you start with the first of the premature speculations.
I'm going to start with Rashad Penny. He is scheduled. Pete Carroll thinks he's going to come off IR this week. He might even be ready for Monday night.
Yeah.
Alex Collins has not been practicing, might miss Monday night, so you might even have him for this week. He's only rostered in 8% of leagues, but really, it's the week after. If Alex Collins still is having trouble, he plays the Jags, who are the 7th worst against running backs, allowing 9 touchdowns in their first 6 games. It's a good spot for Penny, and Carson won't be back by then.
Okay. Brian, your premature speculation player.
I got rookie running back out of Washington, Washington football team, that is Jarrett Patterson, who went undrafted in the 2021 draft, but
he splashed in the preseason. I loved what I saw.
And talk about splash. He put up some eye-popping numbers at the University of Buffalo, or maybe it's Buffalo University. I'm not sure which one, but in 2019 as a sophomore, averaged 140 rushing yards per game with 19 touchdowns in 13 games. And then last year in 2020, 19 rushing touchdowns in just six games, propelled by his FBS single game record of 8 rushing touchdowns.
Oh, God. With that was one game?
409 yards against Kent State.
Wow.
Now, Antonio Gibson, health always in question with him. And if something were to happen to him long term, Jarrett Patterson could step into that lead back role with J.D. McKissic just keeping his change of pace role. So, and it's the season is going to be gone for Washington very soon. And they're going to want to see what they have.
Jarrett Patterson. You know, keep in mind, Gibson's got a hairline fracture in his shin that will not heal in season.
Oh, every step has to be excruciating pain for him.
There's a real scenario at some point. We're only at the 1/3 mark of the season. At some point, they may wind down Antonio Gibson and turn that primary job, not to J.D. McKissic, whose role I think would remain unchanged.
Yeah.
It would largely be Jarrett Patterson. I couldn't agree more, and I like him more than my premature speculation. Nico Collins, who, Scott, not realize you just broke down all of Nico Collins' last segment.
Sorry about that.
The big size, all the opportunities, the negative game scripts. There's so many reasons to think that a receiver and reasonably good or improving, better than expected, passing from Davis Mills. I think Nico Collins, wide receiver Houston, has an opportunity to be somebody you can start on and off the rest of the year.
Absolutely.
Yeah, 6'4", Nico Collins.
6'4". Absolutely. Like they so desperately need a second receiver to step up.
Yeah.
And the draft equity on Nico Collins, I think he was the first player they drafted this year.
Of note as well, they talked about it earlier in the season with the Houston Texans about basically trading anything that's not nailed down. Again this week, rumors have surfaced about Brandon Cook's move even before the trade deadline.
Oh.
If Nico Collins becomes the only guy in town.
I know. I don't know if that would help him or hurt him, honestly.
Yeah,
I think I'd rather have Cook's on the field.
Yeah, that might be true.
The Monday nighter is Saints at Seahawks, and this is a tricky Monday night matchup from the Seahawks side, and we'll talk about that in a second. It's a little more straightforward on the New Orleans side. Jameis Winston was my take-a-chance-on-me quarterback. Like him a lot in this one. But let's talk about his receivers. Marquez Callaway, somebody that you can pick up and start. Outside number one receivers are destroying Seattle. Julio Jones, Justin Jefferson, Deebo Samuel, Robert Woods, Deontay Johnson. Those group against Seattle, average game, 9 catches, 125 yards, and almost a touchdown against Seattle. Opposing number one outside receivers. That's Marquez Callaway. The Seahawks shuffled their secondary a couple of weeks ago, but Sidney Jones, as the new starter, has been brutal, allowing an almost perfect passer rating of 157. In his coverage, he's allowed 2 touchdowns and 3 starts. Callaway's been fantasy viable in 3 straight games, and he will be here again. I've got a B grade on Marquez Callaway available in over 50% of leagues. If Deontay Harris is healthy for this game, another guy you could pick up for many of the same reasons and give him a try here. He's got a hamstring injury. He's a desperation dart throw with a C grade in the bipocalypse. I'm not going to the tight ends, Troutman and Johnson. Favorable matchups, but they're splitting time almost evenly. And you can't guess who's going to get paid in this. So hopefully you don't have to go to either one, but it is a favorable matchup. If you're truly desperate, I would try Johnson, but I don't think you want to.
They're averaging 28 yards a game combined, I think.
Yeah, that's
like
it.
That.
They're totally touchdown dependent. And that's Johnson gets the touchdowns. Alvin Kamara is an obvious A and an elite opportunity against a team allowing the most rushing attempts, the 3rd most rushing yards, and the 8th most rushing touchdowns. Kamara getting tons of run as a runner. And that's going to continue in this game. Let's go to the Seattle side. And I want to start with the thorny part of this matchup, which is the running back spot. So we got to be careful here with Alex Collins. He's dealing with multiple injuries and did not practice until lightly on Friday, and we don't know. It's shaping up as a game-time decision. We don't know for sure if he's going to go on Monday night. The backups here, it's really convoluted. As Scott mentioned earlier, Rashad Penny may very well make his return to the field, but there's also Travis Homer and DJ Dallas. If Collins goes, he will probably be the workhorse, which he has been to this point. But if he doesn't go, then who knows what the rotation's going to be like between Penny and Homer and Dallas. And beyond that, it's a brutal matchup against an elite run defense anyway. New Orleans giving up just 2.8 yards per carry and just 55 yards per game on the ground. Do not chase last week's 2-touchdown game by Antonio Gibson, which was a total fluke and required 20 carries. Even if Alex Collins plays, I don't think he gets near 20 carries here. I have a C grade on Collins only if you feel very good and we get good reports before Monday about his health. Otherwise, just leave him on the bench in a tough matchup. Now let's go to the passing attack under Geno Smith.
attack in air quotes.
Air quotes, right? They couldn't see the air quotes, but I hope you could hear that. Pete Carroll's trying to save Geno Smith from himself. He's only allowing him to throw the ball farther than 10 yards downfield 6 times last week. That's it. That's nothing. And the problem
for those two receivers, that's not a good
thing. I know, right? So we're used to Russell Wilson going back and unloading those gorgeous deep bombs to Metcalf and Lockett. And Geno Smith, they let him throw 10 yards downfield 6 times.
So Geno Smith, obviously on the bench, but I mean, Geno Smith, does he come out at half and they just signed Jacob Eason with a bigger arm? Do you think he comes in after the half and helps?
Maybe next week when he learns the playbook a little bit. Who knows? Now, in fairness, Geno completed 5 of those 6 passes of over 10 yards. He completed 5 of 6. So maybe they will let him air it out a little bit more in this game, but it's a difficult matchup against a secondary that's only allowed 5 passing touchdowns on the season. So Smith is, in fact, on the bench. So what does that do to Lockett and Metcalf, you may ask? Well, for Metcalf, the good news is in 5 quarters with Smith, he's continued to perform well with 10 targets, 9 catches, 112 yards, and a touchdown. Not bad in 5 quarters of work. So I still like Metcalf okay here. Saints secondary not allowing touchdowns, which I mentioned, but they are giving up 200 passing yards per game to receivers, and that's 4th most. And Metcalf's got a tricky matchup against the physical Marshawn Lattimore, a cornerback, who is Pro Football Focus's 3rd-ranked corner and held Metcalf to 2 catches for 67 yards last time these teams met 2 years ago. So I don't love Metcalf here. I've got a B grade on Metcalf. But I don't feel good about it because it's Geno Smith. Lockett, on the other hand, it worries me a lot more because he makes his living on the long ball and the Seahawks don't let him throw downfield. So we've seen the Saints get burned by deep downfield speedsters like Robbie Anderson and John Ross. So maybe there's a little bit of hope. You only need the one connection. And if Marshawn Lattimore is on Metcalf, Lockett gets Chauncey Gardner-Johnson or Paulson Adebo, they rank 105 and 100th at the cornerback position.
Can never trust those hyphenates.
You never can. And so Lockett, I'm still giving him a starting grade because his side of this matchup should be so easy with a C grade. But that's about all you want here. Gerald Everett and Will Disley, Saints have not allowed a tight end score, and no tight end is top 55 yards, and those guys are splitting stuff up anyway, so it's all bad.
Will Disley.
All bad.
Yeah, we don't want any part of that. Let's talk Dearness Johnson, who looked sensational on Thursday night. Man, I loved what I saw.
Nearly every carry looked like it was going for 7 yards.
Yeah, and well, I think most of them did go for 7
it
yards.
Felt like it.
And a lot of times, it was based on what he did with the ball.
His blockers, too.
Yeah,
really well.
I thought he played great. So, we think Chubb could come back as early as next game. They got 10 days off. Chubb could come back, but we've seen in the past, Kevin Stefanski doesn't use one workhorse back most of the time. He did last week because he didn't have a choice. Dearness Johnson's probably a factor for this next month or so while Kareem Hunt is out. What do you think about Dearness Johnson until Kareem Hunt comes back?
I think that's fair. I think that he slides almost right into that Kareem Hunt role where he's proven he can do those things. I don't know if they can catch the passes quite as well, but I think he's proven he can just slot right in. And what you were doing with Kareem Hunt, you'll be starting him in your flex a lot of weeks.
Yeah, totally agree. He's pretty Kareem Hunt light at worst. We might see Demetric Felton taking a little more targets away from Dearness, but yeah, Dearness Johnson is gonna flex worthy.
I just love the story on Felton. No,
it's amazing.
Dearness.
Absolutely. AAF and
DMing all
that
stuff. AAF teams to try to get a workout.
Love it. All right, let me give you one more quick hitter. Christian McCaffrey next year goes in the first half of the first round, the second half of the first round, or in the second round?
He's no longer in that clump of running backs that's going to lead the draft off like he was this year. He's going to be late first, more of an early second to me, because he can lose you. You can lose your league drafting Christian McCaffrey in the first round.
People have 2 straight years. People have learned that.
I think this year is really – pushed people that we can't draft running backs that early. I think people are going to flip on that next year.
Should they do the opposite?
I think we're
gonna
see top tight ends go. We're gonna see top tight ends go early. We're gonna see a lot of wide receivers again.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Fantasy Football Weekly comes back next week. Good luck in the bi-pocalypse. And as a reminder, all my player rankings available for free at guillotineleagues.com. Talk to you next week, everyone. Bye-bye. Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.